Among Us. I'm your guide, Derek Hayes. Oh boy, are we in it tonight. The Southern California region is getting pounded with rain. The weatherman is calling for 2 to 3 inches over the next 12 hours, which is a lot for SoCal. And it's a lot for areas with steep elevation gains because of flash flooding. Mudslides, loose rocks, washouts, that sort of thing. So it's a real good night to stay home and listen to spooky stories. And coincidentally, that's exactly what I have prepared for you here this evening. A piping hot dish of monsters, ghosts, and strange lights in the sky. But it's with a creepy tune that we begin here this evening. Please join me in North Carolina, where Angela is waiting with Adele.
Hi, this is Angela in North Carolina. I have a story. It's about a 177-year-old plantation house in Winnebago, North Carolina, close to Wilmington. It's actually the old Governor Russell's mansion. Back during the Civil War, I guess. Anyway, my husband's family owns this house, and it's beside my house. And we were fixing the house up so that we could rent it out for an Airbnb. And actually, my mother-in-law had been living in it, but she since then moved, so we were going to do something with the house. And this was one day last summer. My husband was working on the house alone. He was hanging up lace curtains in one of the big bedrooms. And he heard music playing, like a music box type music. He heard it playing, and he went around looking for this music. It just started playing out of the blue. And he was looking everywhere. And he found a little toy that used to be his when he was small. It was a little music box, like a jack-in-the-box type thing, but it was a bear. It was like a little antique box. I don't know. Anyway, it was a little toy that his mom had gave him when he was a baby. Well, he said it played for like 2 solid minutes, and then it stopped. So he finished working anyway. He doesn't believe in any kind of paranormal stuff at all. And nothing's ever happened to him. So he just chucked it up to coincidence. But later he was on the phone with his mom. And he said, "Hey, Mom, do you remember the little teddy bear jack-in-the-box that used to be mine when I was little?" And she said, "Yeah, I remember that thing. It hadn't worked in 20 years. Well, it just miraculously played that day. So he asked my son, he said, "Were you playing with that music box over there? Did you wind it up and it just finally like released or whatever?" And my son was like, "No, I haven't touched that thing." Anyway, later we ended up renting the house to somebody. It was a lady and her dog. And it's a big 2-story house. It's got 4 porches on it, and it's really old, but it's fixed up. It's nice. We've got it full of antiques and whimsical kind of stuff, Alice in Wonderland, Wizard of Oz, just stuff. but she decided to stay there by herself with her dog. And she left in the guest book that she periodically heard music playing. And when she would run upstairs with her phone to video record it, it would stop playing. So anyway, that's my story. There's been several different things happen over there, a couple to me, few to other people, and everybody in the family that stayed there has a story. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks, Angela, for the phone call. Hearing disembodied music is one thing, but to hear disembodied music coming from a tiny child's music box, well, let's see, another thing altogether. Now, I can't speak to Angela's husband's experience, but I can tell you this sort of phenomena has been reported in the past. There is no shortage of stories from others that have claimed to have heard the exact same thing. One legend in particular that dances around this phenomena is that of Larundel Asylum in Bundura, Australia. The facility opened in 1953 and served to treat those with psychiatric disorders. Larundel was officially closed in the 1990s, but reports of ghostly hauntings are still made by visitors, workers at the facility, and those brave enough to do an investigation there. According to legend, one female patient became increasingly attached to a trinket that she owned, one of the few possessions she was able to have with her inside the facility, a tiny child's music box. The sounds of that box were said to flood the halls of the asylum. That is, up until her untimely death, which occurred in the third floor ward. Now, those who investigate Larundel have claimed to hear a phantom music box still echoing through the dilapidated halls. And as a special treat for you here tonight, this rainy, spooky season evening, I have a recording of this purported phenomena. Now, the following was posted to YouTube by an investigator that goes by the handle Sheena Baked Bina. And according to the post, she was investigating the building around 11:55 p.m., where she found herself inside the largest building there at Larundel, the one with the long hallway, she says, when suddenly she heard this sound resonating throughout the hall. Super creepy. Now, as for the list of things that you probably don't want to hear in an abandoned mental institution, I bet a haunted little music box ranks right up there. And that goes double for old plantation homes, Angela. So thank you for sharing that story. And thank you for making the phone call. We all know that familiar feeling when dinner time rolls around and it feels like your fridge is full of question marks. Thankfully, ButcherBox has your back. Skip the last-minute trip to the grocery store or the expensive takeout menus, because ButcherBox delivers over 100 premium protein choices straight to your door, including 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. For nearly a decade, ButcherBox has led the industry with meat and seafood that's antibiotic-free, hormone-free, and independently verified. Every product meets the same rigorous standards, whether it's filet mignon or chicken nuggets. So whether you're feeding a growing family or trying to eat clean without the stress, ButcherBox offers curated or fully customizable plans that fit your schedule and preferences. I live in a small town with only one major grocery store, and I gotta be honest, I don't love the meat choices from there. So being able to get ButcherBox's high-quality protein straight to my door is awesome and super convenient. You can truly taste the difference. It's like an expensive restaurant-quality meal right at home. As a certified B Corp, ButcherBox is committed to high standards, from how the animals are raised to how their team supports workers and reduces environmental impact. Plus, every box ships free and includes members-only perks like recipe inspirations, tips, and exclusive deals. As an exclusive offer, our listeners can get free protein in every box for a year, plus $20 off your first box when you go to butcherbox.com/MAU. That's butcherbox.com/MAU to get this limited time offer and free shipping. Again, that's butcherbox.com/MAU. Don't forget to use our link so that they know that we sent you.
To the next hour, about whether or not it is true or false.
Now our next entry comes to us from California, but it also comes to us anonymously. Please welcome our mystery guest to the program.
Hi, Derek. So I just wanted to call you right now because I'm sitting here at my window in the Ventura County. Mountains are right in front of my window. I don't even know how to tell you, but I just saw a metal sphere, probably must have been like 5 inches round. I don't know how to say that, like a sphere. It wasn't big, but big enough for me to see. And it came behind the mountain, like it launched up, and it was just going up the mountain. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing, because why would a sphere come out of a mountain in Ventura County in the daytime? But I couldn't get my phone fast enough to take a picture or record it. I sit here on my desk all day. I'm going to keep continuing to see if I see another one. I'm going to send you some pictures of what it looked like. That way you can post it. But I'm just freaking out here. I don't know what that was. Anyways, Derek, thanks for all the work you do. I love hearing your stories and everybody's stories. Thank you. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you, caller. True to her word, our caller did send in a couple of photo examples that give us a pretty good idea of what it was she saw. But frankly, it doesn't take much of an imagination. Just picture a chrome basketball hovering in the air. Now, as far as sightings in that area go, the region from LA all the way up to Santa Barbara is a genuine UFO hotspot. The Topanga Canyon UFO flap, the purported underwater USO base, just off the coast there, and the countless reports made from that region over the past 75 to 80 years. All that activity has cemented this area as a bit of an area of high strangeness. Now, the last thing I'll note here is that these silver orbs seem to be growing in popularity. It was only a year and a half ago that we learned of the Mosel Sphere, a silver sphere not unlike our caller's here, that was caught on U.S. surveillance video, hovering over the city of Mosul, Iraq. I left a link to that gem in the show notes. And before we move on, if the presence of these mysterious orbs are of a concern to you, apparently they've been seen in this part of California before. And apparently they've been in the area for a long time. Because the following report, made to the National Archives at Riverside in 1959, claims that two law enforcement officials, Officer Orville Clinton and Sergeant D.A. Kelly, witnessed four metallic orbs, approximately the size of basketballs, gradually moving northward in a line over San Cayetano Mountain, over in Fillmore, California. which also is in Ventura County. Around 11 p.m., both men watched as the metallic orbs would come together, then move apart rapidly. The night was clear, and the orbs made no sound and left no trail. The sighting lasted for more than 2 minutes before the objects faded out of sight. Now, a link to all this information is, of course, available in the show notes. Just go to monstersamonguspodcast.com and click on the show notes tab. Now, good job keeping an eye out here, caller. And of course, please let us know should you see it again. Thanks again for calling in. And folks, if you have a story you would like to share here on the program, give my hotline a call at 888-608-NIGHT. That's 888-608-NIGHT. Or you can record your story using the Voice Memo app on your phone and email it to me at monstersamonguspodcast@gmail.com. Now, there are a couple of rules that you need to know. Don't forget to keep it to one story per call. And call back if you need more time. Please only call a story in once. True stories only. And of course, call from a quiet room in your house. Not from a vehicle, please. And if your youngsters have a story they would like to share, they can give our sister show a call, Monsters Among Us Jr., at 833-MAU-KIDS. Or you can shoot us an email at monstersamonguspodcast@gmail.com. However you reach out, we're dying to hear from you. Now, what's spookier than seeing a floating orb outside your office window? Well, how about seeing one inside your house? Please welcome Brittany to the platform.
Hey, Derek, this is Brittany. I am just a south of the Mason-Dixon line. This is something that's happening a few times, something too big, but it just makes no sense whatsoever. So it was about a year ago. It was around 9 o'clock, and I was getting ready for bed, had my door open, and my roommate was home. Our bedrooms are directly across the hall from each other. And I was getting ready, planning to leave some laundry. I had my door cracked about a few inches, and I just see this flash of light. I have no idea where it came from. Like, it was like the equivalent of an LED headlight in pitch black driving down the street at night, but it was in my house. It was in my room. And it was so bright, and I actually had my back towards it, like kind of catty corner, but it was so bright. It was like somebody had taken a picture with an old school flash, and I had no idea where it came from. And I asked my roommate, because her door was open, and I was like, did you see that? The way her bed was, she was facing the door. She didn't see anything. The way the hallway is and where the windows are located within the hallway, there's no way possible it could have been a headlight, you know, coming through a blind or curtain or anything like that. It just, where the position of the light came in, it made no sense. Well, cut to about 6 months later, my roommate moved out, and I was living alone. It was around the same time, 9, 10 o'clock. I was getting ready for bed, and the way my room is, my bed is in front of a window. I love sleeping in the complete darkness, so I have blackout curtains, blackout blinds, everything. There's not an inch of light getting into this room. And I was just kind of watching TV, about to lay down, turn the light off. I was staring directly at the door when it happened, and I see this flash of light. The same exact light. It was at the same height of the door. I myself am 5'11", so this was the equivalent of somebody my height or taller if they were taking a picture. And like I said, my roommate had just moved out, so I was very kind of, I'm a true crime junkie, obviously believe in everything paranormal, so I was very concerned, very freaked out. I honestly had no idea what it could have been, because at that time, I had another roommate moving in, and I was on the phone with them, and I went through the entire house, every closet, all my windows are locked. I like to keep all the doors closed in the hallway, so there was no light getting in from anywhere. And I went outside just to see, and there's nothing. Fire detectors on the other side of the house. Because, you know, sometimes when the battery is low in a fire detector, it'll kind of flash. Like, there's nothing within that area that could produce that amount of light. It was like a pure LED light with like a flash of a camera. And I kind of thought that was, I was like, well, maybe somebody broke in and they're taking a picture of me and I'm not even aware they're in the house. It was not the case. Every door was locked. Every window was locked. Every window was covered. I had no idea what it was. My sister had passed away about 2 months before that happened. I was like, well, maybe that was her, but she was also a paranormal lover. And we distinctly had that conversation when she passed or when I passed, like, we're out of here. We're not staying around. We're not haunting people. We're just moving on. So I don't think it would have been her. And of course, the first time it happened, she was still with us. So I have no idea what it is. Have a good day.
Thanks, Brittany, for calling in. Now, full disclosure here, I think there's a huge difference between what Brittany saw and what the previous caller witnessed. Brittany's orb seemed to be a ball of light or energy, and in my opinion, seemed to be of natural or possibly ghostly origin. The subject of our previous call, however, almost certainly originates from our own military, or possibly from alien sources. Again, those are just my opinions. Now, I do like the idea of your sister coming back to visit Brittany, and I hope that was indeed the cause of your activity. But given the timeline, I'm not so sure that was the case. Either way, we're sorry for your loss. Whatever the explanation, this was an amazing story. And I'm sorry I can't offer up any answers, but I can offer up a huge thanks to you, Brittany, for taking the time to call in. Now, folks, it's time for another quick break. But when I return, I have a trio of calls that'll keep you locked inside your house. I'll be right back.
I understand that I'm not alone.
Online visit, truth.
Believe this, caller, not as colorful.
All right. As promised, I bet these next three entries will have you either wishing you were inside or happy that you are. Please welcome Annette out of the state of Oregon.
Hi there, this is Annette. I was very young, I was in my 20s, and I went up to go camping. Well, the ultimate goal was to go into Eastern Oregon, but we had worked all day, my boyfriend and I. We had worked in the morning, and then we got in our car and we went up Highway 58 in Oregon to go up into the Cascades, and we found a nice little camp spot just off the road. We had two golden retrievers, and it was my boyfriend's parents' dog, Roxy and Charlie. They were great dogs. Anyway, so we got our tent set up, but we were kind of tired and wanted to stay up a little bit later and have a campfire, so we decided to maybe go in and take a nap so that we could stay up later. So we tied the dogs up with these sort of nylon ropes that, you know, you use for boats, you know, that plasticky kind of rope. We tied them onto their collars, and then we tied them to the picnic table because this camp spot, it only had like maybe 12 or 15 campsites, and there was nobody else there. But Highway 58 was just right off the road, and we didn't want the dogs to get hurt. So we took our nap, and we got up from our nap, and we crawled out of the tent. And the dogs are just roaming around the campsite next to us. They're happy to see us. And I'm like, what the heck? You know, they're not tied up. So I look down and the rope has been sliced in half. So they had the rope connected to their collars it was, you know, maybe a foot of rope, and someone had sliced it with a knife, a real clean slice. And it was the same way with both dogs, and they were happy to see us. And it was so weird. We were looking around. There's nobody there. We're thinking, did someone just stop and, you know, sever the rope? You know, is someone hiding in the woods? And just wanted to make sure that we knew they were there. Anyways, that night we, you know, had our campfire, and I remember looking out in the woods and just, you know, thinking about that. But nothing else ever happened. It was just weird. Anyways, love what you guys do. Love the show. Have a great day. Bye.
Thank you, Annette. Now, having one dog get snagged on something, and maybe as a result the rope gets cut, well, I guess that's plausible. It certainly could accidentally happen. But to have it happen to both dogs, both leashes, well, that's sus, as the kids would say. Now, if something like that wasn't enough to unnerve you, get a load of this one from Nick, from just north of there, in the state of Washington.
Hey, Derek. This is Nick from Central Washington. This is not my story. I just heard this 5 minutes ago from my stepdad. Full disclosure, he does have dementia, but my mom is the one who started the story, and as soon as she mentioned it to him, clarity came to his eyes. It was crazy to see. But anyways, he told me this amazing story. So anyways, in 1990, roughly, he was up at a place called Whistling Jack's, which is up above Natchez, which is Central Washington, in a place called the Nile, which is just the middle of the forest. Badass river goes through there, amazing trees, tons of logging going on. So Whistling Jack's is just like a little lodge that's up there. They have rooms that you can rent to stay. They have a restaurant. They have a bar. They have a little mini mart attached, gas station, whatever. And so he was at Whistling Jack's 35 years ago and decided to go on a hike. He used to hike a lot. He was a cowboy back in the day. So he's going up this old logging road, and he was just walking along, and he said there was like a big embankment to his right, probably about 12, 15 feet tall. And out of nowhere, a bunch of rocks just started coming down. So he stops and he looks around. He doesn't see anything. It's like, okay, well, that's kind of crazy, whatever. You know, he grew up being in the forest. And I mean, when you come from Central Washington, there's mountains and forests just everywhere. You're always around it. Anyways, so he continues on, and it happens again and a whole bunch more. And he stops and he looks up and he sees, just the way he put it, Bigfoot standing up there looking right at him. He said, "It's a big, big boy." And he stopped and he stares at him, and Bigfoot's looking back at him, and they're just staring at each other. Then Bigfoot jumps off of the top of the embankment 12 to 15 feet up, came out about 12 feet and landed on the logging road that he was on right in front of him, you know, about 10 feet away. And he said, again, he was a big boy. And they just stood there and they stared at each other and just watched. And he was like, well, I'm thinking about maybe trying to go back and get my camera and hopefully I can get a shot. But as soon as he turned, Bigfoot jumped off of the road they were on and went down the hill and was gone. And he said he was big and brown, and he looked kind of like an ape, if you will, but bigger than any ape could ever be. Stood there with, you know, intelligent look, intelligent face, and was just watching him the same way he was watching him. And he said that he ended up going back to Whistling Jack's after that because it scared the living hell out of him. So he told the bartender, he's like, man, I think I just saw Bigfoot. And the bartender told him that all the loggers up there, and that area gets logged to all hell, had all seen Bigfoot. And they all described him the same. And that he will stop and look at you, but as soon as you start moving, like if you're going to move towards him or move away, he just takes off. But if you just stand there, he'll just stare at you, and you can stare at him. All of that kind of makes me jealous because I grew up in that area. I've been there a million times, and I've never seen him. And then, of course, you know, my stepdad gets to see him 30 years ago. So, anyways, keep up the good work, and thanks.
I bet you never really forget a story like that, no matter how bad your memory gets. Thank you, Nick, for sharing the call. And man, I love a good Bigfoot story. Of all the subjects we cover here on the program, I bet Bigfoot or Sasquatch is my number two. I just can't get enough of them. But sadly, I was looking through the Monsters Among Us call bank just this morning, and I only have a handful of other Bigfoot encounters on hand. And trust me when I say that's not enough. Not by a long shot. So if you're sitting on a Bigfoot story, or maybe you know someone that is, do the groundwork. Let's get those stories shared. 888-608-NIGHT. Or email me at monstersamonguspodcast@gmail.com. Either way, really looking forward to hearing from the big guy. And I bet you're going to look forward to hearing this next story that'll have you headed inside for the evening. Please welcome Greg out of the state of California.
Hey, this is Greg from Southern California. And I was driving home, and once I got outside of the last city in Idaho, it was Marsing, I believe, into Oregon, driving a 2020 Super Duty, I saw something come out of the, side of the road just from my headlights, enough for me to say, oh, and put two hands on the steering wheel. I saw it. My wife didn't see anything, and I'm pretty sure I hit what I thought was a coyote. My wife felt it. Kids were asleep, and I got to the next gas station, which was about 30 minutes away, got out, looked at the truck, and there was no dent, no nothing, no blood, no fur, no anything like that on the truck. So I don't know if there's any skinwalkers in that area, but that's kind of what I think it was, because there wasn't any evidence of me hitting anything. Anyways, love your podcast. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Greg, for calling in. Now, this episode is accidentally very West Coast heavy, but when the region offers up stories like this, I have absolutely no issue with that. Now, what do you think it was that he ran over that night? Could it have been a skinwalker, as Greg seemed to suspect? Or maybe a dog man? Perhaps Bigfoot? Or maybe a known animal? A fox or a coyote that narrowly escaped death by literal inches. Or, maybe it was a trick of the eye. Perhaps a trash bag floating in the wind caught the draft of the truck, and for a brief moment, it took on a vague werewolf shape. Your guess is as good as mine, but these kinds of calls are my favorite to receive. There's just something about dogmen, werewolves, and other creatures that gets my blood pumping. And for that reason, this will not be the last time we touch on these ethereal beasts. But first, we need to take another quick break.
Data cover of any health routine can help strengthen your immune response. Are you listening?
All right, I promised another dogman story, and I will deliver on that promise. But first, nightmares are bad enough, but when they come to life, that's when true fear sets in. Tina, welcome to tonight's show.
Hi, Derek. This is Tina from Northern California. And I have been wanting to call in and share my story for a while. So I just want to jump in with telling you a story about my grandma. She recently just passed away. She's 99 years old, but she had a recurring nightmare all her life of a little child dressed in all white, like in baptismal clothing who would follow her around her house and hold her arms out to her and call at her. And my grandma would run and slam doors and the little child would always show up again. And so as far as we knew, this was a nightmare that my grandma had, and she didn't really like to talk about it. So it's kind of the only information we could get out of her. So the crazy thing, though, is that many of my family members actually saw that little entity in her house. And so I wonder how we could see something if it was somebody's nightmare. I feel like maybe it was a little bit more than that. But one time we were at my grandparents' house. They lived in Southern California, and I had four cousins, and we would spend all summer there. So I spent a lot of time in her house, and they had a very cool little house, little modest three bedroom. There was a den, and the den had a screen door that went into the backyard. So when you're playing in the backyard, you could look in and see in the den. And when I was about, 10 or so, we were all running around playing outside. It was in the middle of the day, having a good time. And I stopped what I was doing and I looked over towards the house and I saw a little person run through the den. So I saw them run past the screen door. It was white and it was fast and it was little. It was not one of us. We were all outside and I knew right then what it was. I knew it was the little entity that my grandma was so scared about talking about. I just kind of shook it off. I saw a lot of things when I was little and I never really feared them. I never really got scared about supernatural. It was just kind of a given in our family. Talking to my aunt, this house that my grandparents lived, they raised all four of their children there. And my aunt would tell me that she had seen it several times out of the corner of her eye or dashing from room to room. And when she lived there as a young child, her brother lived outside in like this little platform room because they had three kids at the time. So in order for each kid to have his room, my father slept outside in this little like platform room. And every morning he would have to knock on that screen door for my aunt to unlock it and let him in so he can get ready for school. And she said that many, many times she would hear the knocking. She would get up, open the door, and there would be nobody there. He would still be asleep. So they had a lot of incidents when they were little living there that my aunt will talk about. As we got a little older after high school, my cousin actually moved in with my grandparents and she was staying in that den area. So when you walk in the front door, you're in the living room and the house goes to the left or the right. The left would be the kitchen, dining room. The right would be a hallway towards the bedrooms. And then if you just go around, there's the den. So you could like run laps if you wanted to, which kids would do. It was super fun. We could run from the den to the living room. So anyways, my cousin and I were in the den and we were getting ready to go to bed. It was late. We were just talking. The beds we were laying on, our feet were pointing towards the kitchen door. So you could see the light around the door if the kitchen light was on. And then our heads were pointed towards the bathroom door. So at some point we had just passed out. And I woke up all of a sudden and I realized that the light in the kitchen was on because I could see it through the door frame. And I, for some reason, just assumed she was awake too. And I just said, "Who's in the kitchen?" And as soon as I said that, the kitchen light went off. I heard these little footprints run through the living room where my bed was. It was the wall that shared the same wall with the living room. So I could hear someone run around through the living room. And then the bathroom light came on and it all happened at the same time. Lights came on and off and little feet went running through the room. And I just laid there knowing exactly what was happening. And my cousin said, let's just go back to sleep. And we just went back to sleep because my grandparents were the only ones home and they don't run. We knew it wasn't them. So we knew it was the little entity running around. Another time, my cousin and I were sitting in the living room and we were just talking on the couch. And my uncle, who was older than us, he had one of those Pee Wee Herman dolls. He had it on the coffee table and it was facing the TV. And He thought it was really funny to put the doll there facing the TV like it's watching TV because it was really stupid. So anyways, my cousin and I were talking. We look over and we see this Pee Wee Herman doll that he's got positioned watching TV. And we both were like, we hate that doll. That doll's so stupid. And then we start talking some more and a little while goes by and we look over and the Pee Wee Herman doll's head is facing us. And we were like, oh, okay, that stupid doll. I hate that doll so much. We just picked that doll up and threw it in his room and slammed the door because the doll moved. We knew. We had both commented on how stupid it was that it was watching TV. I guess it didn't like that or something because then it turned to look at us. So anyways, my grandpa passed away and my grandma had to move out of that house. And my cousin, who still lives in Southern California, was driving through the neighborhood about a year or so ago and went by the house and decided to stop and knock on the door. And a very nice young family had moved in and she said, I know this is weird, but I just want to know, has anything strange happened in this house? You know, my grandparents used to live here. I grew up here. I'm just curious. And he said, oh, you mean the little entity? And she was just floored, like, wow. And he said that when they first moved in, things were a little strange, but they had a priest come in and bless the house. But basically, since that happened, they haven't had any incidents. So that was pretty interesting that the entity stayed in the home. And I was happy to know it didn't follow my grandma anymore because she was living up in Northern California with us. So anyways, I absolutely love your podcast. And thank you so much for letting me tell my story. I hope you can use it. Bye.
Thanks, Tina. Sounds like an awful lot of activity. But as unbelievable as it all sounds, there's a bit of validation in that the new owners of the home have too had similar experiences. But that little entity that you spoke of, your grandmother makes it sound like a child, but it seems that anyone else that comes in contact with it doesn't seem to paint it in the same light. Which sort of makes me wonder if it didn't present itself differently to the grandmother than it did to everyone else. And that kind of stuff will definitely keep you up at night. So thank you again, Tina, for sharing your story. And be sure to let us know should you receive any updates. Before I push play on this final entry, a quick reminder that you can get all sorts of merchandise in our shop. Just visit monstersamonguspodcast.com and click the shop tab. Not only will you be supporting the show, but you're also supporting independent artists as well. Again, that's monstersamonguspodcast.com and smash that shop tab. Now, on to that final entry. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey, Derek and Monster Fam. I'm Joe from Michigan, but my story is coming from Lubido, California. I'd say something around 1997. I was 7, I think. It was quite a while back now. I'm 35. But this one would have been at night. You know, I was getting ready for bed and sitting on my bed in my room and had to get up to go brush my teeth, but as I was going to do that, I looked over and through my window, I saw what I can only really describe as a kind of typical werewolf-looking figure. The light from my room was just enough to show the mostly black and kind of dark brownish hair on it. I can picture this thing like perfectly even to this day. I can remember the eyes and the ears at the top of the head and the snout going forward. And the closest depiction I can think of is either the werewolves from Skyrim, the game, or from the Underworld series maybe. Pretty close, but it's not exact, and All I remember is that I was really scared at the time. And I, you know, ran out. Of course, when I told my parents, they thought it was just, you know, kid imagination kind of thing. And, you know, it could have been. You know, I was under a lot of stress during that time. And that was around the time when my insomnia started kicking up. But I think the biggest two things that I think about that is that just out beyond my window, maybe 3 feet something away from it, is the fence. And the fence was pretty tall, and this thing that I could see out the window had to be taller than the fence, at least. It was obviously hunched over, and it was just the oddest thing, because it wasn't just stationary, it was moving, and I could picture just how it kind of like, it was like a little bit of a shake motion that it did. But I think the thing that confuses me the most about it is that Rubidoux, California, it's a pretty big city type area. And right where we were at, we were maybe about a mile or so from the bridge heading toward Rubidoux Mountain. So it's not like I was near any big wilderness areas, really. When I was younger, I thought it had to have been some sort of shape-shifting creature. Now that I'm older, you never really know, but I kind of feel like I might have just hallucinated it or something, but I've never seen anything like it before, and I've never seen anything exactly like it in movies or anything like that. But man, if I could draw, I could probably draw that sucker up right good. But pretty recently, I actually did have the idea that it could have been just a dog that had gotten into our yard or was on the other side of the fence, and maybe it was just light enough that it made it look closer and was like standing, leaning on it, just sniffing around or something. But I'm not sure that it really matches up with it all. But it's something that's kind of bothered me throughout my life. I've never really had closure about it, and I think that's kind of the big thing that's a draw for a lot of us with stories, is that there's really no closure to these things. Thanks very much, and I love you guys, and have a good one.
Thank you, Joe. Now, for starters, for those of you unfamiliar with this area, and I didn't know either, even though I can literally see this area from just up the road here on the mountain. But Rubidoux is located just east of Riverside, California, here in the Inland Empire. So, SoCal, for anyone outside the state. And coincidentally, Joe described the creature as looking like lichens from the film franchise, Underworld. Well, as it just so happens, I was lucky enough to work on several of the Underworld films, beginning with Rise of the Lycans and going all the way up to Blood Wars. And when I left the company back in 2016, I asked my boss, who was a producer on all those films, if I could keep a prop from the movie as a bit of a keepsake. And being the amazing guy that he is, I ended up going home with a genuine lycan head. Now, this was just a visual reference mask. A performer would use this while wearing a green screen suit, and he'd be up on stilts. This lichen mask would then sit on the top of his head to create an eye line and a face for all the other actors to react to. This method also gives the creatures on screen their incredible size and height. So it's not exactly screen used, but it was an on-screen reference tool, if you will. But it doesn't really matter, because it's cool as hell, either way. And might I say, awfully scary. Now, all this humble bragging is to share with you that this thing is realistic and unnerving, and many times I've thought about crawling out onto the roof and using it to peer into Sarah's office window while she's working late at night. But then again, I'd prefer to stay married. Now, I've attached a few photos of the mask in the show notes if you want to take a look. And I'll tell you, if what Joe saw looked anything like it, he'll quickly understand why the story has stuck with him for so long. But as for Dogman in this part of California, Sarah and I joke all the time about the Wolfman of Cedar Glen, a sort of made-up monster that we assign to every missing pet sign and every strange howl we hear coming from the forest. And a good friend of ours up here actually saw what he described as a werewolf in a storm drain, only about a mile from where my cabin sits. So the theory is at least rooted in some sort of true encounter. We just embellished a bit for our own entertainment. But as it turns out, there are other run-ins with this creature here in the Inland Empire. And describing a similar creature isn't all that these encounters had in common. It seems whatever this thing is, it is a habit of looking into windows. The following account is from the popular podcast Dogman Encounter Radio, episode 408. And according to that broadcast, the witness was roughly 10 years old when she had her Dogman encounter. She was lying in her bed by a window that evening at her grandparents' home in La Puente, California, only about 30 miles from the location of Joe's experience. The witness claimed that it wasn't different from any other night. That is, until her dog, Bear, went crazy and woke her up. In a rush to see what had alarmed her dog so badly, the witness jumped out of bed, peered out the window, and came face to face with a creature staring in at her from outside. When she screamed for her mother, the creature stood up, revealing its towering height. She dove under the covers, but by the time she regained her bravery, the beast was gone. Now both this entry and Joe's occurred years ago, so I can't say I cracked any case by any means. But I can say that I did find something that might explain both of these sightings. Now supposedly, the following recording was made by the Palmdale, California Police Department. According to the Post, the incident occurred about 2 weeks ago, along the 3800 block of 3rd Street East. Here is the actual recording.
Handle 26, free handle 26, Lemmy, SS 921, 38515, 3rd Street East, cross of Avenue Q, Queen 4. Male adult wearing a werewolf mask, wearing all black on a bicycle, standing in front of location, looking for windows, left and southbound towards Palmdale Boulevard, tag 357.
What do you think here, folks? Could someone in the SoCal region be peering in windows wearing a werewolf mask? And could he or she have been in operation all this time, stretching these great distances? There's 60 miles of mountains and city that separate Palmdale from Rubidoux. That's a lot of ground to cover. Now, I'm not going to close things out here with some dude in a werewolf Halloween mask. We can end on a much spookier note than that. So if you will, please allow me to make one more point. Now, hopefully you remember me telling you about the Wolfman of Cedar Glen, our mostly made-up Dogman up here on the mountain. Well, after all this digging here tonight, I'm not convinced that it's entirely made up. The following occurred just down the mountain from us, near a town called DeVore, right there along the I-15. This is how the experience was printed in Lon Strickler's Phantoms and Monsters. I was 13 or 14 years old at the time. That night, my band had played a Battle of the Band show at the Showcase Theater in Corona. When we came home from the show, I went to the side of the house near a shed to take a piss and smoke a cigarette butt that I had stashed. I looked into the field and gazed upon the trees and familiar scenery that I have known my whole life. I know the landscape perfectly, but one thing was out of place, and at first I couldn't tell what it was that I was seeing. What I saw was what appeared at first to be a man walking, then running through the field on the side of my parents' house. In the early a.m. hours, maybe 1 or 2 a.m., this was extremely out of the ordinary for the time and place. No one would ever be out there. Its movement didn't look normal. Its legs were funny. Then I noticed it had the head of a dog, like a coyote or German shepherd. It was headed north toward the mountains, with the strangest movements. I can't describe it. It just didn't look natural. Eventually, it was out of my view. I can't remember if I heard any sound from it running. It was far enough away that I don't recall how it sounded. I just can't forget how strange it looked while it was running or galloping. I'm not sure there's a word to describe its movements. Now, since I'm plotting distances on a map, this location is only about 16 miles from where Joe saw what he saw. And it doesn't end there either. I also stumbled upon this story, a literal run-in with what some are calling the Redlands Dogman.
Recently, a realtor with the initials JK from the Inland Empire, or the IE, who lives in San Bernardino County, shared a story that happened back in 1996. He and his wife had left home early while it was still dark, and as they made their way to the highway, something massive bolted out in front of their car. Before JK could stop his car, he hit it, and he hit it hard. He first thought he had hit a giant dog and was going to get out to check on it, but his wife felt something was off and begged him not to get out of the car, but he did anyway. He got out and he walked to the front of the car, and there on the ground was something he could not make sense of. It was not moving, so he got in his car and backed up to get a better look at it. His headlights were illuminating something massive and bulky, something canine that was clearly not canine. Quote, it had what looked like a lion's mane. It had teeth, like it came right out of a Hollywood horror movie. I can't even begin to describe the fright I had in seeing this thing. Then in the report, he remarked again about its teeth, its massive teeth. Blood was pouring out of its mouth and it wasn't moving, but its massive amber eyes were both open and faced right at JK's direction. Neither him nor his wife could determine what this massive beast was, but it was not a bear and it had a canine's head. JK backed up and drove around it. He told his wife they would investigate it when they got back later on in the day and it was light. However, when they returned, it was gone and there was nothing there but a giant puddle of dried blood.
Now that clip from YouTube user The Adventure Guide. And the area I think that this took place in is less than 20 miles from the location of Joe's run-in. And the video goes on to explore other experiences here in the area. And of course, all of this can be found in the show notes at monstersamonguspodcast.com. And this is where I had to stop. Not because I wasn't still finding information. To the contrary, in fact. But because I'm out of time for tonight. But listen, this is right in my backyard. And now that I know these reports are out there, I'll be more vigilant and aware of any future reports. Something tells me this deep dive isn't over. But for now, a huge thanks, Joe, for sharing the entry. And a huge thanks to you, listener, for swinging by here tonight. Now, Monsters Among Us podcast is written and produced by me, Derek Hayes. Copyright, Red Crow Media. Additional support is provided by Sarah Carter Hayes, Delaney Bowers, and Connor Ryan. All media used in this production is done so under the protection of fair use. Give us a like and follow on our social media accounts. Give us a like and follow on YouTube. Join our Discord server. And by all means, leave us a rate and review wherever that sort of thing is possible. Now don't forget you can catch the show every Saturday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern on the UnX Digital Network. Just visit unxnetwork.com to tune in. And finally, tonight's score was provided by Iron Cthulhu Apocalypse. Co.AG Music, and Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. Now don't forget to watch the film. BoregoTriangle.com will get you there. And hopefully I'll see you on the other side. And if I don't, you have a good night.
Thank you.
You know what I mean, Saturday? I can just call him Jamie.
It's not dead.
It's not dead. It's 6 months if we're lucky. Dead.
Well, I spent far too much time on that Dogman deep dive. Now I'm playing catch up. But here to round us out here tonight is Sandy, out of the state of Virginia.
Hello, Derek. My name is Sandy. I'm from Virginia. And my call is in regards to season 18, episode 43, the guy that was talking about jumping. I don't know if this is the same thing, but this happened to me about 26 years ago. It was before me and my husband were married, and we had to travel like an hour to see each other. And it was probably in the fall time because we did a lot of traveling back and forth. It was about an hour from his house to mine. It was a nice, cool night. I was sleepy when I left his house to go home. And I remember rolling the window down, trying to get air and everything. And so I had went through several small towns. And when I got to this one town that I was, normally go through, I start through that town. I get right at the first red light, and I start through there. And my head nods down like I'm nodding, you fall asleep. And I jerked, and I raised up my head real quick. And I was completely in the next town past. And it was at least 20 miles, which scared me because I thought, oh my gosh. I was like, I don't know what just happened, I was just thanking God that I didn't wreck and die. But I don't know if this has anything to do with what he experienced, but it's still in my mind fresh. I'll never forget it, and I hope never do it again, really. Because it was kind of scary for me. But anyway, that's my story, and I absolutely love the podcast. Thanks for all you do. Bye.
Thank you for calling in, Sandy. I feel like a small version of this has happened to all of us at some point. We've sort of zoned out on our way home from work or the store. The next thing you know, you've driven several miles without any recollection. Now imagine doing that and waking up in another town. It's truly disconcerting. And thank you again, Sandy, for sharing the tale. And folks, this is the point where I start checking for tickets. Because from here on out, you gotta pay to play. But don't worry, it's super cheap and worth every penny. Just visit monstersamonguspodcast.com and click the Patreon tab. Or join us on Apple subscriptions. Either way, $5 a month gets you days worth of back content and all the brand new stuff. And $1 a month gets you all the regular stuff ad-free. And you can try either using the free 7-day trial. There's truly no better way to support the show and to get so much content in return. So what are you waiting for? Join us in the beyond today, where we share stories like Jake's out of the state of Oregon.
Hey there. This is Jake from Oregon. This time I have a personal story that is a little hard to share because it is so personal, but I haven't heard anything quite like this on your show yet. So it started when I was about 6 years old. My little sister was just an infant, about one, and my dad was in jail at the time. He ended up being there for a couple of years. Anyways, so it's me and my mom and my sister at home, and I keep having this reoccurring dream. And in this dream, I remember it so vividly because I had it for so long, like 3 months or something like that. Like every single night, this is how the dream goes. So me and my dad, we're in the garage. We walk into the house, which this was the real house that we lived in, by the way, at the time. From the garage into the house, open the door, and that door leads into the kitchen. if you go left, and into the dining room if you go right. Well, everything was on fire. Everything was on fire. And my dad looks at the front door, which is across the dining room, and then across the living room, and then into an entryway, and then there was...